the point. Godly people learn, and we don't take counsel for those who are deceitful and want to take advantage of us. Verse 6 says, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood. Basically what I just told you about. But the mouth of the upright will be delivered. I think this is probably a continuation of Proverb 5. The counselor seeks to profit from what he's doing. A good counselor does not seek to profit. In America, we're not worried about dangers as much as in every other part of the world. America is still probably the safest nation to be in the entire world. And yet we do have evil counselors. We have evil people who are seeking to profit. And I want to tell you, it's a scriptural. Do not cast your pearls before swine. Do not cast out the good things you know about something that can be taken, grasped, pulled in, and used against you or used to profit to get in front of you. Do not dare flaunt in front of anyone. Allow someone who is wicked to take advantage of you. Simply by not running your mouth is one way to do that. The other thing is just make sure you're dealing with an upright person, not a person who's trying to slander you or attack you. Let me tell you one other thing. If you're ever talking with someone on the phone, and this is just word to the wise, and they're trying to sell you something and you don't want to buy, one of the tactics on phone sales is if you're sweet, you're sweet, you're kind, and when you can tell that you're fixing to lose them and you're fixing to say goodbye, they become belligerent to you. They start telling you how bad you are. That's phone tactics. That will forces most people to go ahead and whip out the credit card and buy from them just to get them off the phone. Okay? That's where you hang up. So you hang up. Do you know what happens later the next day or whatever? They call back. Okay. Do not let people do that to you. Those people are lying in wait to try to take your blood. It's your money, but you can call it blood. Verse 7. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. Now listen, when I get to heaven, I'm going to have a little talk with God. Actually, I won't, because I will know. I've lived long enough, and so have you, that we've lived long enough to see wicked people finally getting their just due from God. But it sure takes a long time sometimes for God to get around to it. Don't you know? Don't you believe? And so we look at these wicked people and we go, God, aren't you going to come down? Aren't you going to straighten this out? Aren't you going to take care of this? You have to remember, God's got a plan for them too. I don't want to understand that, but I do understand it. Because there are wicked people that God is using other wicked people to get them to where the full record book against those wicked people is filled in heaven. So when they stand before the judgment, the Lord will say, depart from me and go serve the one you served one on earth. The theology is there. I just don't understand why it takes so long. I don't understand why it takes so long. But the house of the righteous will stand. The house of the righteous, just like that tree I was talking to you a while ago, good trees are firm foundations. They cannot be uprooted. They cannot be dragged down. You know, in my backyard, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 palm trees that are about 80 feet. Every single time we get a storm, I pray, God, I need your help here. I need these trees on the ground because it's not safe for me to climb up there to try to cut them down. If you will just get them down on the ground, then I can slice them up in just a little time and get them hauled away. God, I need your help. This would be much more economical for me if you would put them down instead of me. You know, And the storms come and I watch them. And those old palm trees do this. They're made to sway. They're made. Some of those palm trees are about this big around. Then they go down to about this big around. Then they go back up because it's been a drought year. And I keep thinking, this is the year. This is the year. They're going to lay down. I'm going to be able to get rid of them. No. No. Be like the palm trees, folks. Be firmly rooted, well established. Oh, you may have a little kink in your get along because of something that happened along the way. Yeah, you may be having to use the walker or the cane, or you may be having to get into a wheelchair, but it doesn't matter. You're firmly established. You know who you are. You know where you're going. You know what's in place. You know what the plan is, and you're headed that way. But I sure don't understand why God waits so long on some of these folks. Verse 8, a man will be praised according to his insight, but one of perverse mind will be despised. You know, insight can be understood as what we would call sound, good judgment. As children, we all grew through adolescence. And we grew to understand who we could trust and who we couldn't trust. We had friends that we would trust them with our lives as a child. And then we had some other friends as a child that we wouldn't trust them with a patty of mud to carry around for us. Because we couldn't trust them. They were liars. They were never faithful to us. They were not good friends at all. They were not trustworthy. As we grow up, God allows us to have kid interactions so that we can gather an insight of who we should relate to as adults and who we shouldn't. Now, we're supposed to have a relationship with everybody because we're here on the recruiting team for the King of Glory. We understand that. But there are some people that you can relate to that you still don't want to fellowship with them with a meal because you do not want them tainting maybe your children or someone else by what your children will learn from them. So you have to have good judgment on who you can trust and who you can't trust. Some, you're going to give them praise because of their insight. You're going to come to them and you're going to say, I need to ask you about this. And lo and behold, everything they say to you, you go out and you do it and you go, boy, I never thought that would be the way it is, but that really worked. But then there's those perverse people. And those perverse people have a perverse mind and they give you bad counsel and you will learn to despise them. But we have to grow up to learn how to do that. Verse 9 says, better is he who is lightly esteemed and has a servant than he who honors himself and lacks bread. Everybody in this world, the Lord has a plan for their life. Now, not everybody should be president, or not everybody can be president of the United States. Now, let me tag on to that. It's not in your notes, but I probably ought to put it that way. Not everybody should be president of the United States. Not everybody here should be a mayor of the city or could be the mayor of a city. Not everybody should be the chief of the Indians. What happens whenever everybody's the president or everybody's the mayor or everybody's the chief? You have no citizens. You have no townspeople. You have no Indians to do the work. Not everybody is designed by God to be the head, the leadership. It only takes one, two, or three herdsmen to herd a thousand sheep at a time, or even more. It doesn't take that many men to run a herd of cattle from here to Wyoming in the old days to run them up there to the market, or to run them to Oklahoma City to the market, or run them back down to San Antonio and back all, you know, two, three, or four men would run these huge herds and take care of them. They're the leaders. You've got the cattle. What Solomon is trying to say here is you don't want to be a person who is highly esteemed that you highly esteem yourself. He's trying to say, don't make yourself bigger and better than you are. It is better for you to be esteemed in the place that you belong. Some of us belong as worker bees. We're just worker bees. That is where we belong. We're not meant to be leaders. We're meant to be followers. And so we need to get to that point after we've tried things in life and as we've grown, we say, okay, my job is to do this. I am constantly amazed, but also in a respectful way, I am constantly amazed at people who take great pride in doing things that I cannot stand to do. I will pull my engine apart and I will rebuild it and put it back in, but I am having a hard time not cursing all the whole time. From the time I pull the first wrench out, I'm sticking it on, I'm going, oh, I hate this. I hate doing this. I hate this. It is a necessity, but I hate doing this. And by the way, if you've never tried to change out a muffler on your car, you better pull the engine first, because it's easier to do the engine than it is the muffler, because that muffler's all burnt on there and all of that. I don't like doing those things. In fact, I have come to the point in life where I do not care if I ever touch a hammer, a saw, a nail gun, a wrench, a Phillips screwdriver. I don't ever want to touch those things again, because even when I'm doing all of that, I'm going, I don't want to do this. This is not joyful for me. And then we've got people who are so prideful. There's a guy by the name of Craig Steele. Y'all don't even remember the name. Most of you don't know the name. Some of you in here that worked at Danbury, you knew his name. He came and he helped us at Danbury, build Danbury. And he was just a little old simple guy, skinny, arrogant. Oh, Gene's here. Gene, you remember Craig. Arrogant. He was arrogant, wasn't he? Pretty much. Knew his business very, very well about how to build. Simple. Couldn't do anything else. Couldn't get a job or anything else. And he loved to build. When you look at the porches out there at Danbury, they are straight as a razor today. How many years? We're 15 years after it. Straight as a razor. All those long runs of fascia boards are straight as a razor. Why are they straight as a razor? They're straight as a razor because Craig Steele took pride that he never wanted someone to come back and see that front of that roof do this, because that's one of those hiccups. He spent a lot of time making sure we got it right. Took pride. The whole time when I'd take him home, I'd think, Lord, this guy really loves what he's doing. Lord, I don't know why he loves what he's doing, because I don't love what he's doing. But I understand that in a respectful way. It is better, and he knew his place. He knew he was only going to make so much money per week, and that's about all the money he could ever make in his lifetime per week. He would never make the $1,000 a week. He was always going to make the $250, $300 a week. That's just about all he was going to make. And he came to this point where that's where I am. And what Solomon is trying to say here, it is better to be like that, to where you know where you are and you're making your money. And oh, by the way, if I need to have somebody come help me mow my yard, I've got enough money to pay for that person to come mow my yard. On the other side, he says, than to be one who honors himself and lacks bread. I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. Oh, yeah, I can do that. Well, that doesn't look very well. You just don't know what you're doing. Oh, okay. Hey, where are you working today? Oh, I got fired from my last job, but I'll pick up another job. Okay. To be so arrogant about how good you are, and you're really not good, that you can't hold down a job and you can't put bread on your table and you cannot feed your family. It is better to come to the place in your life where you accept who you are, what you make, and where you're going to be 10 years from now. It is amazing to me that I see people that finally settle down into a job. Let's say you're a teacher. You're a teacher in a public school. You go in, and unless you up your schooling to a master's degree, you're going to get a little raise maybe every year, maybe every other year, something like that. But do you realize that 10 years after you start teaching, you're still making within $10,000 of what you were making 10 years before? It's just where you are. And 30 years down the road, you're probably within still $12,000 to $15,000 of what you started teaching at 30 years before. It's just the way it is. So you settle in on this is what I make. This is what God provides. And it's better for you to have a job and be able to hire somebody to help you than to have no job and no food. 10. A righteous man has regard for the life of his beasts, but the compassion of the wicked is cruel. One indicator of what Solomon is trying to say to here, one indicator of a truly righteous person is how he treats his animals. How he cares for them. My wife, my mother's sister, married a man who over 100 years ago now made a deal with the United States of Texas, of the United States in New Mexico, that they leased him for $1 a year a huge amount of acreage. And he was a cattleman. He had one customer, and that customer was the United States of America. He raised cattle to feed the servicemen. That's what he did. Let me tell you something. He pet those cattle. He could go out and he could do this yell, whoa, 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 except really, really loud. And cattle from all the fields would start lining up at the fence lines because he was there. They knew him. Why? Because he and his men fed them. They were well taken care of. And even the ones that he had for his own family to eat were well taken care of until the day they were to be slaughtered because they were in the food chain. My mother's dad, when the Depression hit, sold his paint company to buy chickens and cows. And in the backyard, next to the paint company he'd sold, the paint company went bankrupt, though, by the way, within 2 years after he sold it through the Depression time, he built pens for the chickens and pens for the cows. And to get through the Depression, they traded eggs and milk for the other things they needed. They weren't using money. I asked my mother one day, Mom, were y'all poor in the Depression? My mom laughed and she said, honey, we were poor before the Depression. We were poor during the Depression. And we were poor after the Depression. And she said, you know, we kept hearing the news out of the cities and everything about how bad things were. But it wasn't bad. We had a cistern that caught the rainwater. We drank the rainwater. We used it for, you know, the planting. We never had to worry about water. We never had to worry about anything because we had eggs. We had milk. We traded for beef. We traded for grain. We traded for flour. We did it. It's what we did. We never had to worry about it because and life just went on like it was going before. I remember going out with my grandfather, James Robert Counts, and it was the day that we were to have chicken. And he'd pick out one of the chickens, and that chicken would be plump. And you know what was interesting about those chickens? Those chickens loved Granddad. He could just walk up to the chicken and there it was, and that's the one for the day. Yep. Next thing he knew, the chicken was hitting the fence and he was throwing something off back that way. And then he had set me down on a bucket with a bucket in front of me, and I had a job to do. Do you know what I was doing? I was plucking that chicken. That's right. There is nothing nastier for a five-year-old to do than pluck a chicken. But let me tell you something about those chickens. They were well taken care of. When I go into a home and a person has 15 cats and 15 dogs in the home and there's no food for those animals and they're not kept up, they're not clean, that is not a righteous person. I know right off the bat where that person's heart is. I know right off the bat because I know that if we care for those things that are even in our food chain, not only our pets, but in our food chain, we take care of those things. It is important that we take care of them, and that's what Solomon is saying here. The righteous man has regard for the life of his beast. But you know what the wicked person is? The wicked person is cruel. There's nothing more cruel than to put an animal in a cage and the animal lives in the cage, never gets out of the cage, never has food, never knows when the owner is going to come and feed them, never looks after them, chains them up on a chain, never brings food, the dogs are starving, all that kind of stuff. Those people are wicked in God's eyes. Now you know how I feel about that. He who tills, verse 11, he who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues vain things lacks sense. Follow me on this, folks. My wife's grandfather, and I didn't know much about this, and I still don't know much about it. I'm not an expert in it at all, not even a beginner. I do not have a green thumb. When it comes to planting stuff, I don't think I have any thumb, in fact. But Kay's granddad did, Granddad McCready. By the time I came into the family, he had already retired and was having a hard time getting around. So he leased his land that he used to work for cotton and for corn to a neighbor who planted. And I remember going to see Granddad. I'm married now. This is Kay's grandfather. And we would go out and he'd want to show me his land. And we would go out and he would reach down and he would grab some of the dirt and he'd put it in his hand. He said, well, he's going to have to till it again. Because what's left over after the crop is taken out is tilled underground. And then you go along and you let that rot and decay, and then you come check the ground and you till it again, evidently. And then you till it again, and you till it until it's just about right. And I never will forget him saying on one occasion, well, it's about time to plant. The soil's just right. It's about time to plant. In other words, he's got it done. It's ready. He's ready to go. It's ready to till one more time to get the rows set and the furrows and all, whatever you call it, so they can plant. It's ready to go, and he's done his work well. You do your work well, you get the plant in, you get the moisture, you raise your crop, you get it in, you put bread on your table. Or you might buy a car and a bicycle and a paint rack and ladder or whatever too along the way, but you put bread on the table. As opposed to what Solomon's talking about here, the one it's time to till the land needs to be tilled again, but it's not getting tilled again. Because the person who's supposed to be tilling it is down at the local bar or running the streets instead. And so what happens to his crop is, and I remember Kay's dad showing me, he says, you know, he doesn't do that land right over there. That land right across the road doesn't do it right. You watch it. You come back here, son. You come back here this summer and you watch. He said, you'll see my land right here. This is done right and the rows will be clean. But you come back and watch over here, and there'll be all sorts of things growing because it'll be last year's crop. You know, they rotate the crops. They plant one thing on it one year and another thing on it the next year. So you rotate the crops because they take different type of minerals out, and when they decay into the ground, they put different type of minerals back in. And he said, you'll be seeing the cotton growing up amongst the corn in these fields because he's not tilling it right. He's not doing it right. And lo and behold, do you know what that does to a crop? It's not a good crop. It's not a good crop at all. Solomon is saying The guy that gets to doing the business and does the business when it's time to do the business is the one who's going to put the bread on his table. And the one who wants to go out and lack sense and go out and try and play around all day long on doing things he shouldn't be doing, he should be doing the work. You know, most retailers today down at the malls make half of their money in one season of the year. And if they don't make their money, they're probably going to go out of business. If you're working honeybees, as I did for 8 years, from the time I was 11 until I was almost 19, worked honeybees. There's a time for working the bees. There's a time for moving them and making sure that you've got them established in the bottom box. That's where they make their babies. And you come along and you put what's called supers on top of it. That's where they start storing honey. You're checking you're going back regularly to check to see that box is filling up with honey. When it's almost full, you don't remove it yet. You put another box on top of it so they'll keep filling it up. You put another box on top of it, and we have seen boxes, little boxes about this tall, full of honey. They're stacked up and they'll be about this high. And then boom, 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 when it's time to get them, you come back with your smoker. You got your smoker, you've got burlap stuck in there, and you've got grass stuck in there, and it's just smoking. You start smoking the top of that, and you smoke them down. You take that super off and go put it on the truck. You're smoking it down a little bit more. You take it off, you hand it to a helper. He's putting it on the truck, and you take that box all the way down to the bottom box. It's nothing but the baby bees and the mama and the queen. And you put the top on that box and you're done, because if they don't have place to store honey, they will not store honey. Then what do? One night you show up, because you always do it at night, because all the bees are back in the box at night. They all come home. And you take that box that's only about that big, by that big, by that wide, you throw it up on the truck. Take the next one, throw it on top of it. You load your truck up, you strap it down in the night, and you go someplace else before sunrise, and you set it up in a new bee yard, and the bees come out, and they're confused. They have to learn a new path to go find new stuff. Because now we're not getting the clover. Now we're over here getting the wildflower honey. And the same bees that produce good clover, clean, clear, beautiful, almost clear honey, are now producing dark, dark marigold honey, Indian paintbrush honey. Or you take them over to the orchards another time, because you move the bees around for the different seasons of things that are growing. The sloppy beekeeper just keeps the hives right where they are, and you know what happens? They don't even get a good crop. You got to do the business that you got to do to move these things around. Verse 12, the wicked desires the booty of evil men, but the root of the righteous yields fruit. Sinful men spend every night craving the treasures of others, and when they get up in the morning, they go try to get it. They go try to get it. They're always trying to make money from someone else. Sinful people want to make money illegally. On the other side, the godly people, they're going to produce a living, and they're going to do it legally. They're going to do it rightfully. They're going to do it justly. Verse 13 says, an evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will escape from trouble. Lies are harder to remember than the truth. Have you ever been told that before? Honey, that's not the same story you told me a little while ago, or not the same story you told me the other day. Sweetie, you know, what did your teacher really tell you? That's not what you told me. Here's what you, well, that's what I meant. Honey, if you just tell me the truth, you don't have to worrying about the lie you made up and telling it again. It does not take long for a person to realize that a person's lying because they don't tell the stories the same, and then they have to back up and add, and you say, this is just so convoluted, it doesn't make any sense anymore. But with a person who is listening to someone who tells the truth, you don't have to worry because you know the story's the same. No, the story's the same. With that, verse 14 comes up. You don't have verse 14 in this lesson. It's in next lesson. I guess I'll see you next week. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this time. Just to hear the wisdom of Solomon as he's telling it to Rehoboam, and yet applying it to the things that we do here in our life. Thank you for that, Lord. It's reminders so that we do not be taken advantage of by the ungodly. And may we be godly in everything we do. In your name, amen and amen.